Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Today is 14th day of June, year of our Lord, 2014. Roger S. Sales, our Argentine foreign correspondent, will be with us shortly. Before we get to Roger, here's the market reports. Gold is up $5.50 an ounce to $1,392.20. Silver's up 23 cents. I looked at the side. It says it's up 1.0%. I was thinking it said that silver was up $1.08. I was like, whoa. No, it's not. Silver's up 23 cents to $22.19 an ounce. Platinum is down $5 to $14.50. Palladium is down $2 to $736 an ounce. Over in the equities markets, Dow Jones is off 100 points to 15,073. NASDAQ is down 21 points to 3,424. New York Stock Exchange is off 60 points to 9,272. U.S. dollar index is flat. Isn't up, it isn't down. It's just right at 80.69. Crude oil is up $1.12 to $97.81. Crude oil's bounced back in the last week or so. That's the markets. Do they mean anything? I don't know. They must mean something. They must mean something to someone, but you know, what do they mean in a world that where we have manipulated markets rather than free markets? Roger, do you have an idea on that?
I do, and I think you gave us a perfect illustration, Al, right there in your market wrap-up dialogue, and that was in your little silver price. And that the allegory here is you got to be darn careful what you look at.
Yeah, I understand. Got to be careful what you look at. Careful what you believe. Yeah.
There's deception awaiting at every turn, amigo.
Oh, I understand. The art of war.
It's a treacherous. I'll tell you what, it's easy to understand if you really have a good grasp of what they've set up here and what they're doing and where you find yourself and understand their principles and stuff. You have to tip your hat to these guys because, man, it is a situation where if somebody doesn't understand these principles, you almost don't have a prayer getting out of there with your pants left on you.
I understand that. It is You know, there are a number of passages in the Bible, Proverbs, for example, where they tell you, look, the pursuit of wisdom is to be valued more than gold. You got to get out. You must learn to educate yourself. It's not enough, certainly not enough to graduate from high school, certainly not enough from eighth grade. And even a college education doesn't mean much if you haven't learned how to educate yourself once you get out of college and you don't have a desire to do so.
Well,
if you're not
going to
completely educate yourself.
A lot of those people,
go ahead.
Well, I met with PhD behind their names. I could have sworn it stood for post hole digger.
Yeah, I know.
Or
the only thing that,
one of the two, because you can't get those people out of the box their mind is conditioned into through that process. I'm grateful that I didn't finish college, so at least I can still think.
I think there's a point to that. I think what you're talking about is exactly true, and I've thought the same thing for a number of years. What is the principal filter when we talk about an advanced degree like a degree in law? You go to grade school, you go to high school, you graduate from college, then you do another 3 years on top of that. You don't even get out of school until you're at least 25 years old. What is the principal filter? What are they looking for with someone who goes to law school? And most people
say,
go ahead.
You and I have learned the hard way is this.
Yeah.
They sure don't teach them about law in law school. They teach them about procedure.
They teach but the filter is what? Obedience. The filter is obedience. If you have the kind of juice running through your system, through your body, you're a young man, you're a young woman, you want to get out, it is your nature to be something of a rebel. Right? It's just human nature. And these people with the advanced degrees have managed to sit on their butts and be good little Germans all the way up until they're 25 years old, maybe older than that. And point I'm making is if you won't step out of line before you're 25 years old, you're not ever going to step out of line. You're the kind of good little Germans that the government is looking for.
Well, the other thing, if you want to take this a slightly different turn, is that when you get these people conditioned through those however many years of law school or whatever, you've really schooled them, you say in obedience, you've set them up for the trap of presumption.
Okay.
Because from then on, they presume that that's the way it is, and they run their whole lives, and they'll sit there and argue with you till the cows come home that they're right. Even when you show them things like we have, you know? And so there's the interesting thing about going back to a discussion we had several weeks ago when we talked about how to change belief is through perception. Because there you're battling beliefs. They've conditioned them into belief of living in this illusionary world where they've got all of these things that they think are real that we know are not. And you got to get something to break that belief rather than butting heads with them. And you see, that's happening now. This thing with Snowden this week, all the other scandals. How many scandals are going out there? I heard somebody say there's like 10 or more major ones going at one time. So
shouldn't there be a limit? Shouldn't we have a law, Roger?
Yes.
Congress should pass a law on the number of scandals that can be reported at any one time. I think we've exceeded the maximum occupancy in the political mind for a scandal. So somebody needs a law.
Well, what it is it's overflowing, and that's having the ability to people question their perceptions.
Yeah.
So what is really happening, at least the way I kind of think about it in the big picture here, is you've already seen what the Internet has done to the populace and short-sheeting these guys because they're slow and cumbersome, and the Internet has awoken a lot of people up. You're seeing that in guns. You're seeing that in gold. You're seeing that in some of the other things. Now along comes all of these other things and Snowden. So you've got a mass of people out there now that are somewhat in some degree aware. And you got a whole big mass over here that we complain about all the time. The people that won't listen, well, their perceptions are changing, and that's an opportunity to change their beliefs. And when you've got a good group, big group of people, percentage-wise, with another bigger group over there, now you're going to get exponential growth. And that's what, you know, it's like an MLM. You go along for many years, and you get to a point when there's enough of a base or any other market, and they have that up hockey stick curve. And that little point right there where it turns is called critical mass. And I sense that that's where we're at right now in this perception-changing beliefs. And if my assertion is correct, these people got mucho problemas.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, I just responded to someone's email earlier today. Matter of fact, it's a comment on my blog, not email. But they were talking about how difficult government is and the rest of that. And I went on to point out, you know, we talk about how government goes into tyranny and oppression and so on. But it is exactly the power of tyranny that becomes self-destructive for tyrants. As the Soviet Union became more powerful, it became closer and more oppressive, it became closer to its own demise. As the Nazi regime in Europe became more powerful and oppressive, it actually became closer to its own demise. The Khmer Rouge became more powerful, but as they exerted more power, they really brought on their own demise. Something like that may be happening in this country right now. Government may just be getting so close that people just finally say, enough of this crap, you're coming down.
Well, you know, Al, when you've, especially when it's based on black dark power, okay, what you just laid out is a historic little legacy there of how power eats itself, much like symbolically the symbol of the snake that's eating itself, okay? Because if you're saying that's that many times, you see the repetition, well, you can look back historically and see that same thing.
And in the meantime, before it gets to that reversal, it's precisely people who are struggling for liberty that the government will declare to be terrorists. Who were the terrorists under Nazi Germany? Who were the terrorists under the Soviet Union? Who were the terrorists under the Khmer Rouge? It was the people that opposed the government. But in retrospect, we all know that those dissidents, they were the ones that were right. They were the real patriots, and the ones that supported the government were the real treasonous whores.
You see,
but the government
said,
you're a traitor.
They've gotten themselves in a position where you can turn their own stuff against them. Now, I sent you a little thing last night that one of the American Voice hosts, Wendy Wilson, sent me, and I forwarded it on to you and on subsequently to my whole list, and we'll tell the audience about it because I think it dramatically illustrates what we're talking about here. And that was a little list, and on one side, a little picture, and on half of it, it showed Napolitano, Butch Napolitano, standing there in front with Obama, a Bam Bam, right behind her, right? And it said, if you see something, say something. And on the right side, it says, it showed Snowden, and with one word, did.
Yep. I posted it on my blog. I think that's one of the most exquisite instances of communication I've ever seen. Combination of a couple of graphics and a handful of words, and it communicates an insight that is so profound. The government's saying, if you see something, say something. Wanting all the people, spy on your neighbors, spy, but don't spy on the government. All right? That's the implication. Snowden, he spied on the government. He saw something. He said, this is wrong. He said something. And now the government says, no, don't say anything about us.
Well, see, what you're doing here is you're using their same tactic against them. I've long ago realized that they use a form of wordplay political judo. You know, judo technically is when you got an opponent coming at you and the guy stands there and he's running at you with a board or a hammer or something, right? And you just flip a finger and whip him off and he goes off in the other direction and hits himself in the head with a hammer over there in the corner. And that's kind of what they're doing, is they take these words and they redirect you against your own self-interests. And this is taking that same idea and you're just turning it right with that same force and effect they put behind it, and you're just turning it right back against them.
I agree.
Magnified by numbers of people.
Yep. And the numbers are growing. You know, some people were discouraged because they saw a recent report that 43% of the American people are opposed to surveillance, the government surveillance, but 57% are in support. And some people sit back and they say, my God, it's hopeless. Over half the country is in favor of government surveillance. But the question is not what's the number today, but what is the number over time? I'm willing to bet, I don't know, but I'm willing to bet that shortly after 2001, when we had the 9/11 attacks, the number of people in this country who might have supported government surveillance, if they'd been asked the question, if they'd understood what was going on, it might have been 90-95%. Today, if it's 57%, it's still a majority, but it's dropped precipitously, and if the drop continues, we can expect that the time is fast approaching when the majority will be opposed to government surveillance. You know, there was a time when maybe only 5% opposed. Now it's 43%. The day is coming, you know, might be 53%, 57%, 80%. Watch and see. What is the movement? What's the change? You get my point.
Yeah, I sure do. You know, I heard Michael Rivera, another very competent talk show host who I really admire, say the other day, because he drops a lot of facts out there, covers a lot of stories, and he said that it had come out that Verizon ran a total fiber optic cable from their offices in New York all the way to D.C. to the NSA, and the entire net and feed and everything that went through the company went through there. Now, if
what do you think should be done?
Well, hold it. Let's not stop yet. You can pretty well assume that if Verizon had it, all of them had it.
Yeah. Okay. It's a reasonable assumption.
Now
it's not necessarily true, but it's a reasonable assumption.
Well, I think, you know.
And on top
well
of which,
enough.
Do you think Verizon installed that fiber optic cable on its own initiative? Or do you think the government encouraged it to install that fiber optic cable?
The government probably paid those to Israeli companies 10 times what the rate was to install it.
I don't doubt there was an angle there someplace. It was like the Department of Homeland.
It's like that Herman Talmadge story I told. I sold that cow 2,500 times. Nobody ever comes fix him up.
Yeah, I understand. No business like show business, with the possible exception of government business, which is even more fictitious than Tinseltown. I've got, what was it, something I was, here's a head just a comment from the one of the newspapers. White House cancels Obama's African safari. Did you see that?
No, but I said good.
Well, it says President and Mrs. Obama are planning a trip to sub-Saharan Africa later this month, but the White House has canceled the plan to include a Tanzanian safari on the agenda. After a reporter revealed that a team of snipers with high-powered military assault rifles would accompany him in the wild. The purpose, with the high caliber, the sniper rifles, was to neutralize cheetahs, lions, or other animals if they became a threat. There was an outcry. Apparently, a lot of people think that Obama and Michelle aren't worth as much as the lions and the tigers and the bears. Oh, my. But in any case, they're not going hunt. They're not going to go on the safari and take their snipers along with them. My question to you is, do you think they should be allowed to go on their safari if they dump the snipers and we give them bush hats made out of bacon?
I think we ought to take that story and give it to Jay Leno's writers and see what they come up with.
Well, I'm thinking of bush hats made out of bacon. That's what I want. And as long as you're going there, here, a free hat for you, Mr. Obama, and your charming wife.
Just Obama and Michelle going on safari is enough right there. The rest.
Yeah, I understand. Well, you know what you could wind up with? Now, this is going to be misunderstood, and some people are not going to like this, but what you could wind up with on the safari, you might have Obama and Michelle carrying boxes on their heads as they weave through the jungle, if you catch my drift. What else we got, Roger? Well, I guess we got only about 30, 40.
Is he going to drop by that tribe that puts brown bones in your ear or nose or anything?
I don't know.
Do a state visit to those guys?
Will they stop by Kenya and pose before the sign that says "Home of the President of the United States"?
Right.
That'd be a great picture for his photo album, right?
With the
Barack Obama standing posing in front of that sign. Where are we? We are.
It's the purpose of the trip.
Maybe so. We'll discuss, we'll get into even more important subject matter when we return. I'm Alfred Addisk on Financial Survival with Roger S. Sales. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk on Financial Survival with my co-host Roger S. Sales calling in from Argentina. We will get to Argentina in a moment. First, here's today's special brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. The special du jour is $5, almost uncirculated Liberty coin. That would be just a shade under a quarter of an ounce of gold. $5 gold piece, almost uncirculated condition. One MS-65 silver Morgan dollar, shipping included, $645. The almost uncirculated $5 Liberty contains nearly a quarter of an ounce of pure gold and is a great substitution for gold bullion. The Morgan silver dollar is one of the most widely collected and studied coins ever produced by the U.S. government. It literally stands for and represents the Old West and the lore that goes along with the stagecoach delivery in the small mining towns. Graded MS-65, which on the 70-point scale means these coins are in full gem condition, all for $645, shipping included. Give Melody a call. You'll catch Carla today. Melody is bye-bye, but you'll get Carla. And 1-800-375-4188. Do call. Roger, we got problems. Trouble in Argentina. Here, according to the New York Times, Argentina falls from its throne as king of beef. Beef consumption in this red meat colossus has decreased so much over the decades that the nation recently fell from its perch as the world's top per capita consumer of beef, a title Argentine ranchers are fighting to regain from their tiny neighbor, Uruguay. In another jolt, study warned that pizzerias could soon outnumber steakhouses in our in Buenos Aires. Is this cause for alarm, Roger?
Well, I hope they don't start using that GMO wheat in their crust. Yeah, you know, this is not an overnight thing. This has been going on for some time. It really started a little over 10 years ago in the 2001 bankruptcy, and there's a couple of combination of factors that are at play here, Al, and it's partially is the Argentine's penchant for import and export taxes. Argentina, by definition, is a very nationalist country in that they impose heavy import and export duties. And supposedly, you know, the import duties should stimulate manufacturing within the country. But yet the government's so darn screwed up that they put so much bureaucracy and controls on it that people don't want to screw with the money supply so bad, they don't want to start businesses here. So the other side of the prong that pinched in on the beef industry in Argentina is Monsanto. And the fact that they took all that land where all the beef was free-range grazing and the cattle farms, and they turned them all into soybean and GMO corn. And then started raising on bumper years, starts raising the export taxes on the farmers. And so all the cattle farmers moved over to Uruguay, and a number of them moved, I'm told, to Brazil, too. But here, for example, and this is a guy that raises cattle, a friend of mine here, I shouldn't say a friend of mine, though, he's a guy I know, has bought a couple of pieces of land, Al, and one of them he raises alfalfa, which is a good crop here because it's perennial. You get four or five crops a year out of the, you just cut it and it regrows four or five times. And so then they go and trade it to the people that have cattle and get baby cows because most of the poor people can't afford to pay for the whatever the pesos are in the rolls of hay that they feed some of their others with, and they give them a baby, and they take it back to the alfalfa farm and feed it up, and as well as sell alfalfa, they'll butcher those cows and sell that too. And so the guy that does that told me these figures a couple of years ago, so I know that they're somewhat accurate. Our province here, Mendoza, consumes 600,000 kilos of beef per year, okay? And but it only produces 300,000. And so what you've seen, consequently, with everything I've talked about here, is you're starting
rustlers.
To see.
Sounds like you got a bunch of rustlers that are going into the neighboring province to steal cows. Is that what it is? You got cattle rustlers down there?
In Argentina, anything's subject to theft, I promise you that. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is really unwanted thing, in my opinion, I think, and yours probably too, is that it's caused a lot of feedlots to develop to try and satisfy that demand. And that's not as good a beef. And so, consequently, you try and strive to get to good quality beef. You know, I've told you numerous times, living here is like living in the States in the 50s. And one thing, especially if we're talking about beef here, when you go into the stores, they've got the old meat butcher market, white counter and the glass shelf with all the big cuts underneath them and everything and sides of beef hanging in the back. And you just say, well, I want that one right there, and they'll pull out a fillet, for example, the whole fillet muscle, and they plop it up there, and he puts a knife on it and says, well, how much do you want? You know, and you say, well, I'll take half of it, or I'll take all of it, or whatever it is. And
I understand.
It's still fairly cheap, especially, and this is something that I'm glad you got into, one of the things that I'm just starting to relish in is this 10-to-1 exchange rate I've been playing with here lately. Boy, you talk about getting a raise. I got about a 40-50% raise overnight. Well, not overnight, but feels like it to me.
Yeah.
And so it's what I see in the future, though, is even more interesting because now I'm here and it's starting to happen. When it happens, you read about it like, oh, this happened in 2001 in Buenos Aires. Well, I'm living here now, and I've been here for a while, and I'm going to live right through this. And what I see is happening is Argentina will probably be one of, if not the first country in the world to go down. And so the dollar on the other end of the spectrum will be one of the last, if not the last, currency to hold. and go down because it's the world's reserve currency, and they're doing everything under their power to hold it. So I'm going to play that leverage. The peso going down until it's devalued, and even my little piddly Social Security checks coming in are just going to give me so much more purchasing power as this ratio of exchange keeps going up. So it's a very enviable position I've found myself in right here.
Well, I don't know what to tell you, Roger. It's more enviable in some regards than our position in the States. On the other hand, you know, for a lot of people, as you know, people emigrate to Argentina, to foreign countries, wherever. It's not necessarily for everyone. You know, there are things on one hand to recommend it, but you need a particular psychology in order to adapt to a foreign country. You need to be able to accept certain things. A lot of people can't.
Well, that's true. And I'll tell you what, is things like this test your mettle as a person. Now, personally, for me, Roger, I've always been real preoccupied with a thing called personal growth. And it's when you step into those situations where you feel restricted and you can't do something that you force yourself to go through it and you accomplish it and you grow as a person. And that's what I feel has been the big benefit for me of doing this. It's been a fabulous experience. Has it every day been a bowl of cherries? No. I've had a couple of cherry pits, you know, and I have these moments with the language frustration that I call Argentine moments. And it's when you want something so bad to communicate and you can't communicate and it doesn't get across and you know it's not going to get across and you get so frustrated you want to scream and you just kind of take a breath and go, you know, I like living here so much and I know this is just one little moment and it's going to pass, just like a pane of gas or something. It's going to pass. Well, and everything's going to be fine, see? And that has been a great way for me to approach those moments and get through it. But I've gone through so much personal growth in the last 5 years. It's incredible.
Well, you have your little Argentine moments down there, and we have senior moments up here. And the difference, I think, is you'll probably have fewer Argentine moments as you become more fluent in the language, and yet those of us that are maturing are going to have more senior moments as we become a little bit older. I got another one for you. We were talking a little bit about you think Argentina might be the first country to perhaps collapse.
Well, that wasn't just my opinion. That was that Ann Bernhardt's opinion a couple of weeks ago on this latest video she did. She said that right in the middle of the video, kind of out of left field, and it caught me by surprise. But since I've thought about it, I think she's probably right.
Well, here's what do you think the consequences would be? And where I'm going with this, do we have a domino effect if Argentina collapses? Will there be any other countries that follow, or will this be pretty much an isolated event?
No, I think they're all going to follow. The question is timing, when, you know, and how integrally is it tied down to other things in, like, say, for instance, you know, almost like a domino setup with derivatives.
That's exactly what I'm asking about.
The derivative markets, is that going to feed over into other things? You know, I maintain that any day we can get up and there's going to be a whole, not just one, there's going to be a whole flock of black swans.
I think that's... we all think that's possible, and we wonder, when we see that flock, will it be coincidental, or will it be one black swan lands on our pond, and next thing you know, we got a dozen more following to land on that same pond? Does it trigger, or is it just coincidence?
You know what the guys over at Zero Hedge call that?
No.
They call it a cluster flock.
A cluster flock. All right. Of black swans.
Yes, right. Sir, buddy. Coming your way.
You know, Roger, you're going to get us thrown off this program.
Well, that's Zero Hedge.
Now, I'm not following. I want to make sure that everyone knows that I'm not talking about black swans, and I'm not talking about, what did you say, cluster flock. I have nothing to do with that, but I am moving on to another story here. Emergency manager, Detroit won't pay $2.5 billion that it owes.
I told you it was a cluster flock.
So the question is this. Detroit's emergency manager says the city is defaulting on about $2.5 billion of debt. Kevin Orr said Friday that Detroit is asking creditors to take about 10 cents on the dollar of what they're owed. Underfunded pension claims will get less. Orr spent about 2 hours Friday morning with dozens of people representing banks, insurers, and companies holding Detroit debt. He told reporters earlier in an airport hotel in Romulus that he wants to fix fiscal problems that have made the city insolvent. He has instituted a moratorium on all of Detroit's payments on unsecured debt, seeking forgiveness of millions of dollars owed by the city. He also said $1.25 billion will be set aside over 10 years for public safety, lighting, and neighborhood blight elimination. What I'm getting to, my question is, if Detroit backs out on $2.5 billion worth of debt, is that another one of these isolated events, or do you suppose this could have a significant impact on the state of Michigan? And is it possible that this can even trigger events that will ultimately impact the national economy, or, as I said, is it an isolated event? What do you think?
Well, I can tell you one thing that's not too isolated is that you notice in that article it said the people with underfunded pension plans, like everybody,
were
going to get the very last of the pickings there.
Yeah, they're going to get less than 10%. If you're lucky, you get 10%. If your unfunded pension plan, guess what? You know what that means? You're going to get less than sales tax.
All right. Do you think that might change people's perceptions? And maybe
if you got to start living on your sales tax, you got a problem.
You got right. it, man. Especially when the hyperinflation hits, buddy.
For what it's worth, I've been telling people for about 5 years, ever since I first read John Williams, and I saw his reports on shadowstats.com and recognized the true size of the national debt. I've been guesstimating for at least 5 years that at least 80% and probably 90% of the national debt will not be paid. And what that means is 80 to 90% of the paper debt instruments that memorialize that debt will not be paid because the debt is so great it can't be paid.
And those
it's estimated by some to be over $200 trillion. There's no way it can't be paid. What we see here in Detroit, it just interests me that they're talking in the same magnitude. I've been saying, look, 80, 90% can't be paid. That's exactly what's happening in Detroit. They're saying we can't pay 90% of the debt. That's the implication.
Well, that's,
and the numbers are parallel. It doesn't prove anything.
Well, look at it this way. In the U.S., we're talking about the U.S. debt. What is the U.S. debt? Well, it's bonds, isn't it?
No, it's a lot.
Trade imbalances or whatever, they give bonds.
That's plus unfunded liabilities. Plus unfunded liabilities where they said, we guarantee to give you Social Security until you die a natural death. And,
exactly, but those are different debts because they're debts that you owe to yourself. We're talking about debts that the country
says. I don't know what you mean by you owe to yourself. They are debts where people have paid into Social Security over the years, and now the government owes those people, and the government isn't going to be able to make good on all those debts, although it may be a while before we see that clearly happen.
My point was this, the only way, government makes nothing. Okay, they only make what they can take. And so either through taxation or whatever their policies are, et cetera. So to pay out this money that you and I paid in when we were working back in our working years that they've squandered, they got to go back and go to the well. They either got to borrow it from banks, Keynesian economics, or they got to take the income tax proceeds that come off the bonds that you're the property of that they're just redirecting and giving back to you. So that's what I meant when I said you owe yourself. Okay? And that's what.
Yes, it's an interesting argument, but I'm going to guarantee you. What you owe yourself on those bonds, you aren't going to get back. It's been looted in the same sense that the gold, it might be the gold in Fort Knox. We owe that to ourselves. You might be able to say that, but let's see if we can find it. Let's see if we can find what we owe ourselves. The way it works out is the people we trusted to be custodians for that which we owed ourselves have decided to help themselves and say, to heck with you guys.
Should we start looking down the Caribbean, you think? It'd be a good place?
Well, good place for what? Oh, good place for looking for the money?
Start looking. Yeah.
That's hard to say. I don't know where it's squirreled away. It's not here at my place, I can tell you that. where are we right now? We've got 15 seconds until we're going
we
to... Well, save it, Roger, because we're going to take a break. You can tell us when we come back. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival with Roger S. Sales, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku-band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Roger S. Sales, called in from Argentina on Financial Survival. Let me remind you of today's special. One AU $5 Liberty, one MS-65 Silver Morgan dollar, shipping included $645. I'm not going to go through the whole description again. The $5 Liberty is just a shade under a quarter of an ounce of gold. MS-65 Silver Morgan, dollar 1 ounce, shade under, of silver. Shipping included $645. Give Carla a call at Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Roger and I are... we are discussing important issues and kind of laughing and giggling. I don't know. Can we run? Can we discuss important issues while we're giggling? Did McNeil and Lehrer ever giggle when they were on the radio programs or doing the TV programs, Roger?
I'm sure one of them dropped a zinger in there every now and then.
I understand we do that on a regular basis. I mean, it's not just the occasional once a week or something like that. It's like once every 5 minutes.
Al, you know, I being an old radio guy and having a few miles under my belt at this stage of my life, I came upon a little gem of an understanding years ago, and that was that I've always tried to have fun with whatever I was doing, and it makes it a lot more enjoyable, and that way you put your heart into it more, and that increases your percentage of success. So I try and do things that I always have fun at, and I've found in life when I was doing things that I didn't have fun, that was when I was miserable. So I try and go the other way. Okay, but we can get a little bit serious here, because this little thing that I picked up the other day does have a very serious nature to it, and that's, you know, I'm a radio junkie, and I was listening to talk shows, and usually I'll listen, and I'm doing other things. I'm sure everybody else relates to that, and this guy calls in, and he's talking about somebody that he knew that was an expert on the credit system. Okay, and I wish I'd have caught the guy's name, but I wasn't listening close enough, but I did catch the concept. And the concept was this. He said in a credit type system, one of these Keynesian deals, that as long as you can keep the inflation rate between 5% and even let it get as high as 20%. But once it hits 20%, you automatically tighten the reins and bring it back down to 5, that you can run that system indefinitely. So obviously they're letting it get out of those ranges. Obviously they know this, and that tells you that this is the big step to tyranny. But I just thought that concept was interesting, that they know you can bounce it in that range and just keep it going, and that way, with the way they control everything, they just play the ups and the downs. You know, it doesn't matter whether they sell short or long, as long as they know which way the market's going, doesn't make any difference.
I disagree with the premise. I don't think it can work indefinitely at 5 to 20%.
Well, I said in theory.
Yeah, in theory. That's as far as this goes. In theory, I'm going to get good medical care in my golden years, also under Obamacare. We've got a lot of theories going around here, and then there's reality. And when it comes to the economy, you reach a point where public finally just they either get fed up with the manipulation or they anticipate it, and they anticipate, just as you are anticipating a 10-to-1 return on your dollars down there, the public figures out what's going on, and they say, "Ooh,
no.
You know, there's money to be made here if we play the game right."
Hold on. I'm getting a 10-to-1. I'm anticipating 15 or 20 or more.
No, I get that. I get that. I follow. But I'm just saying that people anticipate the game.
Well, what John Lennon said, let's all be dreamers. Well, if we could all get attuned to that, then everybody would prosper, wouldn't they?
It depends. It's the question of how many people are making money because they genuinely produce something, and how many people are making money because they are flat-out hustling.
Yeah, and they're.
Right?
And
it's one thing to be productive. It's another thing to work the system. And there's always people working the system. There's always some people that are productive, but there's a balance. And when you got more people working the system than you have that are producing cattle, there aren't going to be any hamburgers, or there aren't going to be many. All right? A lot of people are going to say, boy, I could sure go for a hamburger, but I can't seem to find one at any price.
Well, it's a soy burger.
Yeah, I know, a GMO. That's good GMO. We'll be seeing those cartoons. We'll be seeing those ads on the television the next few years. That's GMO Soylent Green. That's not ordinary Soylent Green. That's GMO Soylent Green. And isn't that tasty?
Yeah. As they say here, muy rico.
Yeah.
Al. What do you think about all this IRS stuff here lately? That's another little story. Isn't it interesting that out of all this IRS stuff, not one single Tea Party has been contacted yet?
Yeah,
how many weeks?
Yeah.
They got the joint lawsuits with 23 clients, and none of them have been contacted. Imagine that, Al. And, the other day... The story came out, this is even better, and I don't think we talked about it Tuesday because we had Joel on. It took up the whole hour. But the IRS made an announcement, and then they cut it back. They said, no, that they're buying all these little spy cameras and microphones, like coffee cups and all this kind of stuff. You know who it was for?
Well, I don't know, for the FBI or the IRS.
It was for their own employees.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. You know what I heard, and this goes back now.
That's
gotta
be great for morale, don't you think?
I don't think morale is worth a damn. I mean, I've heard stories about the IRS probably 10 years ago. They had the ceiling on an entire office, one of the IRS offices. You know, it had the panel ceiling they put up overhead where you've got your lights and the rest, that sort of thing. You can lift the panels.
Right.
It fell. It collapsed throughout an office, and it dropped in on top of the workers at their desks. And the reason is because they had been taking files and slipping them up over the head. And they piled so many files, RS files. They did. They were hiding them from the bosses and the managers. The rest of that. You clear your desk, going. It's like a kid. Did you eat all your peas? Yeah, they've been feeding them to the dog or something, you know?
You're killing
me. And the whole ceiling collapsed on them under the weight of this. I've seen reports, although it goes back some years, the turnover, average employment at the IRS, 5-8 years ago, it was 9 months. Average employee stayed 9 months before they left. Now, today, I would expect people that hang on to their jobs a lot tighter, and they're I would expect that they're lasting longer. But it can't be the most fun place in the world to work. I'm not saying it's as bad as a post office. But
I don't know how.
We haven't heard of IRS agents going postal yet, but nevertheless, it's got to be comparable. I know. The whole thing is,
I don't know. I don't know that I've ever laughed till I cried when I was on the air before, man. That's a funny story.
Oh, it was. That's true. It's a true story.
Talk
yeah.
About, just talk about hoisted on your own petard.
It really is hilarious. Because somebody in the office must have suspected, you know, if we put a couple more files up here, this whole thing's going to collapse. And they just kept on adding one more straw to the camel's back until all of a sudden, boom!
They were probably the employee of the year for all the cases they cleared up last year.
Yeah, whoever put the last file up there, he probably got charged as a whistleblower or something along those lines.
Illustrates the old proverbial cliche of the straw and the camel's back, doesn't it?
Yeah, I understand. Same thing. You know, the IRS, for what it's worth, seriously, and the rest of that, how many criminal charges do you think they file a year? Do you know?
Well, no, I don't know number wise. It's not.
It's in the neighborhood of 1,000.
Yeah, not very many.
No, it's triviality, and they're typically, when they do go after someone criminally, they typically file 2 or 3 criminal charges against him, which means there's only 300, 400, 500 people a year who are charged criminally by the IRS.
Well, here in
so
this
the odds of that happening to anyone is criminally. We're not talking about civilly, but criminally, the IRS only comes knocking on 300, 400, 500 people a year. It's statistically it's very small number of people.
Very small, like getting killed by a terrorist. Okay, and the reason for that.
Yeah, that's a fact. That is a fact, though. The IRS will give them this. They actually cause more harm than terrorists. All right? I will make you bet that more people are injured. Sure.
If you take the IRS's procedure, it's an administrative procedure, because if they come after you civilly, they just grab your stuff. It's all self-help. If they come after you criminally, and you see, this is very, very instructional for all the people that are listening that are doing battle with these guys. And it brings up what Al and I have illustrated on previous broadcasts, and that's that you ask questions. Because what happens with the IRS and prosecution is they take somebody down to a fork in the road. And at that fork, they determine whether they're going to go after you civilly or criminally, okay? And most of it, they'll come grab your stuff. Those few examples you're talking about, they go after criminally because those have to go in front of a jury. And what makes that decision for them?
Roger, you have just dropped out. And I don't hear Roger returning right at the moment. Roger was talking about what makes the decision between whether they're going to come after you civilly and criminally. And I can tell you that I also read the United States Attorney's, U.S. Attorney's journal back in the 1990s, early 2000s, can't remember, but at least 10 years ago. But I was reading articles, and one in particular from the... you're back, Roger. Well, let me just finish this for what it's worth. Okay. People, you were discussing how they decide whether they're going to go after you civilly or criminally, and I read the U.S. Attorney's Journal. That's not quite the correct name for it. It's a magazine for U.S. attorneys. Comes out every month, magazine, whatever. And they explained why they go after specific targets for criminal prosecution, and the answer is they're looking for the ones that have the greatest publicity value. Now, it may be the greatest publicity value nationally in the sense of Wesley Snipes or Leona Helmsley or Willie, singer, can't think of his last name right now, and I should be able to, but I can't. What's his last name?
Willie Singer? Oh, Willie Nelson.
Yeah, Willie Nelson, that's it. Yes, yes, yes. They go after that nationally, but they lost the target, man. Pardon me?
Shame on you. He's a fellow Texan. Shame on you.
Well, I understand. But they'll also go after someone who is not necessarily nationally known, but he is in a particular occupation, like an aircraft pilot. When they know that aircraft pilots are routinely, there's a big percentage of them that are ignoring the income tax laws, then they will target someone in the aircraft industry, and they will gut him for the purpose of scaring the rest of them. So you were asking, why did they go after people? Why did they decide between criminal and civil? And one of the reasons, one of the primary reasons, is how much publicity can they get within a group or within the nation in order to scare and terrify people? They didn't use the word scare and terrify, but that's what it comes down to, into paying their taxes.
There's two sides of that coin, because they do that for the positive publicity. What they don't want is the negative publicity of somebody winning like Cheek and taking it to the Supreme Court. So if you've built your administrative file properly, because that now becomes bypasses the rules of evidence and can be admitted into court in front of the jury, and they're not going to want those questions and stuff that they didn't want to answer put in front of them, and they'll come grab your stuff instead. That's my point.
A lot of people think the kinds of ideas that you and I advocate are crazy and fringe and tinfoil hat stuff because we can't point to victories where you sit back and the court said, yeah, you won. And the reason for that is if the IRS recognizes you've got a strong enough case, they won't bring you in.
Well,
they leave you alone, but they won't take you to court where you can get a certified victory where someone hands you a trophy.
And if you cover your bases on the other end, if you cover your bases on the other end of that and not have anything they can grab, you basically beat them.
Yeah, I understand. But you don't get it's like going to the Olympics and running the fastest race, but you didn't get a medal. They're not going to let you run. They're not going to let you run in the lanes they have provided if they know you can beat them. And the point I'm trying to make is that it is entirely possible, and it does happen on a larger percentage than most people would suppose, that these kinds of ideas can work and prevail. The problem is government knows it too, and they will not get into a fight if they think they're going to lose. So we're down to our last 25 seconds. Roger, give them a fast pitch.
www.serfs-up.com, serfs-up.com, or net, hike, hasta luego, Al. See you Tuesday.
All right, Roger, thanks very much. Appreciate you being on the program. Roger, we'll be back next Tuesday. I'll be back next Monday. Hope you all have a good weekend. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Roger, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.